You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today is March 13th, 2013, and it's a beautiful evening out. We hope that people stay tuned and listen to the show tonight. We have big news in the markets. The Dow was up 9 straight days in a row, and it's the first time since 1996. So that was something to be talking about. All the markets were up, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P. Last week, I had Rod Young on with me. He's a CPA and a CFP, and I want to thank Rod for being here. We discussed employer benefits and the effects of those on your tax return, and we also took tax questions. I'm going to take tax questions again this evening because I know that we are mid-March. A lot of people are trying to get their income tax returns done. So we want to help you move forward on that. And in between that, I am also going to touch on multi-state tax returns, part-year tax returns, and local tax returns, and all the nuances of having to do that. As usual, we are live this evening. We are taking your calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Andrea's in the studio this evening, and she'll take your calls, answer your questions, and ask you to mute the radio so that we can talk without confusion. If you would like to talk live on air, she'll put you through, and you can answer questions. We can go back and forth. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, or sometimes people like to be private, just give your question to Andrea. She'll write it down, and she will bring in the question to me. So feel free to give us a call either way. Let's see what else. So we have, we are talking about multi-state tax returns this evening, part-year tax returns, and local tax returns. I want to thank Rob in our office for being available for us for technical issues. I want to thank him very much, and thank Andrea as well. So again, tonight, between our questions that we have from callers, our listeners, I want to be open and ready here for you if you have questions trying to get your tax returns done. But again, in between that, we're going to talk about multi-state returns, part-year filers, and local returns. When might we have multi-state tax returns? When would we have part-year tax returns? And then, of course, I want to talk a little bit about local tax returns as well. If you have questions, phone number 610-758-8810. All right, so multi-state tax returns. What am I talking about there, and how would anyone be affected? And you may be affected more or at some point in your future and not, you know, necessarily be ready for it. So let me go over some of the reasons why we might have multi-state returns. If you work in one state but live in another state that doesn't have reciprocity, I'll talk to you about what that means in just a minute, that's one time we might have a multi-state return. So if I work in a state but live in another state, you might have an employer who's withholding the income tax for that state where they are located. But you live in another state and you're required to pay income taxes to the state you live in. Sometimes we don't have to worry about that if our state where we work and the state where we live have an agreement that's called a reciprocal agreement, meaning if I live in Pennsylvania, but I work in West Virginia, West Virginia employer may withhold Pennsylvania taxes for me. Therefore, I don't have to file a West Virginia return. I just file my Pennsylvania return, and my employer reports Pennsylvania wages and pays the Pennsylvania tax. It's very nice. So there are reciprocal agreements that can help folks so that you're not having to file multiple state tax returns. Now, some states don't have reciprocity, though. And that's where it can get a little bit more complicated for people. Now, a state like New Jersey doesn't have reciprocal agreements, but there is a special agreement Pennsylvania and New Jersey have with each other. So New Jersey doesn't normally have, I think, reciprocal agreements with other states. But there is a special form you can file. And let me talk about that for a minute, because it could go either way. We have New Jersey listeners and Pennsylvania listeners. So for Pennsylvania residents working in New Jersey, you must submit a form NJ-165 with your employer to be exempt from New Jersey tax. And then I assume they're going to withhold Pennsylvania tax. If they don't withhold Pennsylvania tax, but they're not going to, you know, charge you the New Jersey tax, then you'd have to do estimated tax payments. If you live in New Jersey and work in Pennsylvania, you do not have to pay Pennsylvania taxes on your income. But there again, you must submit form REV for revenue, Rev-420, to your employer. So Pennsylvania and New Jersey have this other agreement. I don't think it's under the reciprocity rules, but this agreement that by filing this form with either state to your employer, the employer will not withhold the tax in that state because they know that you're going to be subject to taxes in your resident state. Okay? But other states, it gets much more complicated. For example, New York does not have reciprocal agreements with anybody. So if you work in New York, your employer is going to be required to withhold New York taxes, and you are going to have to file a New York return and pay the income tax to New York. What happens on the Pennsylvania side or some other state that you might work in? What happens is you're going to have to file a New York return and a Pennsylvania return. You have to report your Pennsylvania wages as calculated under the Pennsylvania rules, which may not be the same as what your New York wages are. And this is where it can get a little complicated. And the reason I thought it was important to talk about this on the radio show, many of you think, well, it might not apply to a lot of us. And as we go through the show, we're going to talk more about, you know, other state issues, local issues that will apply as well. But what happens with New York, it gets complicated because you still have to file your Pennsylvania return, report your Pennsylvania wages, and then you get a credit on your return for taxes that you paid to New York. So you might say, well, logically, I know the New York taxes end up always being higher, so I'm not going to owe anything to Pennsylvania, and, you know, I get this credit they tell me about. But what you have to be really careful about, and if you're not careful, you may end up getting income tax notices from the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue. And that is, as I mentioned earlier, New York calculates their taxable wages differently than Pennsylvania. Let me give you a very simple example. If in New York you make $50,000 and you put $5,000 in a 401k, then your New York wages are $45,000. Pennsylvania does not give us a break on the contribution to the 401k, so your Pennsylvania wages are actually $50,000. Pennsylvania is only going to allow you a credit for the taxes that would have been due on the $45,000, because in essence, that's all you were taxed on in New York. So for Pennsylvania, you would end up being subject to that amount on the 401k. So $5,000 times 3.07% would end up being your tax due. Okay, that's a very simple example. There's lots of other calculations that could go into a multi-state tax return. And in particular, New York, if we're going to talk about New York, when you live outside of New York, some people try to get a credit for wages earned while outside of the state. And in particular, if they work from home. Well, if you are working for a New York employer and you are working out of your home for the convenience of yourself, not for the convenience of the employer, New York is not going to give you a break for working outside the state for your own personal convenience. If you are someone who is sent out on business trips all over the country, and there are a lot of folks who live in New York who end up doing just that, let's say you go on a business trip 3 days out of the week to every other state in the country besides New York, you have to track your days, keep track of your days, and then we can take a credit on the New York return for days worked outside of the state. And then you have to remember then your New York wages would go down. And again, Pennsylvania is only going to give you a credit for taxes that you would have paid on that amount of New York income. Okay, it's a little complicated. We'll continue our discussion after our next break. We have opened up the phone lines for callers and questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. Is your car so environmentally incorrect that it creates its own ecosystem?
Donate it through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
This station gets the proceeds and you get a tax break.
To find out more, call 866-789-8627.
Car Talk airs Friday night at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. For more information, visit our website at wdiy.org.
Welcome back. We are talking about taxes tonight. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I realize your financial choices. Welcome. Good evening. And if you have questions about taxes or getting your tax return done, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We've been trying to talk about taxes the last few weeks to help people get their tax returns done. If you have questions holding you up, it's the most fun for me, unbelievably, but it is the most fun for me, especially for folks who want to call in and talk live on air. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Andrea and she'll bring it in to me and I'll do the best I can to answer it. So in the meantime, we're talking about multi-state tax returns and how more people can be affected by it than they realize. And multi-state tax returns can be quite complicated. You have to make sure that you're kind of matching everything up the right way and make sure that you're following the rules for the state of which you're filing. So my example earlier was Pennsylvania and New York. And New York, I'm assuming it's a non-resident. They live in Pennsylvania. So we're talking about making sure that you match up the correct taxable wages and the wages under Pennsylvania law versus New York. And you can't take a credit for more than the wages that you reported for New York. Also, make sure if you are someone who works in New York and you're a Pennsylvania resident, that if you are ever working outside of New York State, that you can adjust your New York wages for that amount. And it can be quite substantial. So for people who find themselves doing that quite a bit, you really need to keep a calendar and track those days and make sure that you're keeping good records, because it could be a lot of money depending on how much money you make, a lot of tax savings by keeping track of that. But you do need to have good records, because New York doesn't want people taking credits for, you know, being outside the state if you're sitting at home or on vacation or any of that. That doesn't count. All right. Another reason why we might have multi-state tax returns might be if you have a W-2 showing state wages and withholdings, maybe from like a prior residency. So we had a client who had worked, I think it was Maryland, and their employer didn't change it in time, or maybe the employee didn't let the employer know in time. So the employee had changed residency, let's say, you know, October of 2011, and didn't get around to maybe telling the employer, or the employer didn't change their records until like March of 2012. So at no time in 2012 was the person a resident of Maryland, but the employer was still taxing them and reporting it as Maryland wages and taking out Maryland tax. So this employee stayed with the same company, but moved to another state, became a resident of Virginia, I believe. And so we ended up having to file a Virginia return and a Maryland return just so that we could get the Maryland withholding tax returned, refunded, because the employee, the taxpayer, would not have been subject to Maryland tax at all. The Maryland wages should have been zero. So you file a return, you show zero Maryland wages, and then you get the refund. Now, what happens in that instance, though, remember that Maryland income, as it was reported on the W-2, really should have been Virginia income. So we have to make sure that we report that income on the Virginia return. And then what ends up happening is usually the person owes a little extra money. So multi-state tax returns can be a little complicated. They're not hard. They're just a little complicated because you kind of have to trace and track activity. I'll give a little piece of advice for anybody who's considering moving across state lines or changing jobs, going to different employers. Make sure that you keep pay stubs for the period that you change. So, for example, my Virginia, Maryland person, they have one W-2 because they were at the same employer the whole time. Their federal wages were the correct amount. It's their state wages that were totally wrong. So what happens when you file a return, you have to follow what the W-2s say. So if you're making changes from that, which means, as I said, if it said, you know, $5,000 of Maryland wages and I say it's zero, we have to say why that is. So you want to make sure the W-2s will add up in total when you're looking at multi-state returns. You want to make sure you're properly reporting all the income, but you want to have good records. And one of the best ways to kind of trace your actual income and to where it was earned was by using your pay stubs for the point of moving. So if you move at the end of June, make sure you print out a June pay stub and throw it in your tax folder, because it may take some time before your employer catches up and gets things corrected. Okay, another reason for multi-state tax returns, rental properties. A lot of people have rental properties. I'm really surprised. I guess it's an East Coast thing. People out here in Pennsylvania, they seem to like New Jersey properties. They have little beach houses or, you know, row homes that they rent. And I see more and more people having homes, moving, and keeping their prior residence as a rental property, or converting their prior residence into a rental property. So a lot of people will have rental properties and they may be in other states. I've also seen people inherit property in other states. So there may be a reason to rent that. Or people who, you know, like to travel to a particular state like Florida or California, and they think someday maybe they'd like to retire there. So they buy a property, rent it for years and years and years with the hopes of eventually converting that property to a principal residence maybe. But in the meantime, you have a rental property in another state. And again, as a residence, as a resident of Pennsylvania or New Jersey, you're filing your resident return. But if you have real estate, rental real estate in another state where you're generating income off of it, maybe you're generating losses off of it, you need to file a return in that state where you have that rental property. Because at some point in the future, if you have income, you got to pay income taxes on it, and then you'd get your credit on your resident state. But you may eventually sell that property and have a big gain. Well, the state is going to want their tax on that gain eventually. Or maybe you might have losses that have carried forward. It depends on what state you have that rental property in as to what their rules are for whether or not they allow carry forwards of rental losses. We call those passive losses. Pennsylvania doesn't let us carry them forward, so you're kind of stuck there. But if you have one of these rental properties in another state, I've seen some people think maybe it's they have the mindset in Pennsylvania that you can't do anything with the losses. So they don't file the returns in the other state. Like if they have a rental property in Colorado or somewhere else, they don't think they have to file a return because they have a loss. But if those other states have passive loss rules where they allow them to carry forward, similar to federal, then there may be reasons to track those. And sometimes different states have different rules on depreciation. Pennsylvania doesn't follow the federal exactly, and you'd have to make sure that if you have a property in another state that you know the depreciation rules specific to that state as well. Folks, we're ready for another break. I haven't had any calls yet. If you have questions, give us a call, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the show. The phone number this evening to call in if you have tax questions, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're live. We can take your questions live. If you're not comfortable talking on air, you can give your question to Andrea. She'll write it down and she'll bring it in to me, and I'll do the best I can to answer it. I had a question today. Someone had emailed me and asked me if the rates on dividends went back to ordinary rates, and that's in regards to something called qualified dividends on your investments when you invest in what they call qualified investment, domestic corporations, things like that. If they're paying dividends, they qualify for a lower tax rate. And he had asked if that had changed because that was supposed to be one of those sunset provisions that was going to go away, the special favorable tax rate on qualified dividends. And for sure, for 2012, we knew that we still had that. So for 2012, the tax rate on qualified dividends, if you are in the 15% or lower tax bracket, the tax rate is zero, zero, zero. That's on qualified dividends and capital gains. If you are in the higher than 15% tax bracket, the tax rate on qualified dividends and capital gains is 15%. Sorry, I just got a message. I got distracted for a second. Is 15% if you are in the higher than 15% tax bracket. So a 15% tax rate is still a better tax rate than, you know, ordinary income for people who are in the 25, 28, 33 tax bracket. Now, what happens in 2013 is for people who are in the 39.6% tax bracket, which I think is upwards toward, you know, $400,000 or something, that capital gains tax rate is going to go up to 20%. So people in the very top tax bracket will pay 20% tax rate on their qualified dividends and their long-term capital gains. But for the other folks, those more favorable tax rates will still apply to qualified dividends and capital gains. I also want to mention for 2013, we will also have the Medicare surtax. If you make more than $250,000, there will be an additional tax of 3.8% on your lower of your net investment income or the amount over $250,000, the lower of. So that's where sometimes I think people might think, oh, are we going to have higher tax rates on our dividends? That might be what some people are considering, but it's a separate tax, and I think it's just best to keep it in your mind that it's a little bit different so that you don't get confused. Okay, if you have questions this evening, please give us a call, 610-758-8810. I had someone call on the road in New Jersey, Jorge. I hope he can still hear me. He says, I'm employed as a truck driver and receive 33 cents per mile. Of that 33 cents, $0.18 is for the travel, and $0.15 is for a travel allowance. My W-2 amount is significantly lower than what I was paid for the year, and I don't want to cheat the system. Am I not being taxed on the travel allowance, or should I refile my tax return for 2012? Well, first, Jorge, what I would probably do is I would check with your HR people or your payroll people to make sure that they reported everything properly. But some of this might not be taxable to you. And if you're talking about just the travel piece, that might be when you say your W-2 amount is significantly lower. You might not be talking about like your gross wages. You might actually be talking about the travel piece. There are some special transportation benefits. Last week when we talked about employer benefits, there's lots of different employer benefits, but one of the fringe benefits I believe they can give employees that could have some special tax treatment is for transportation. So I would have to look exactly to see what kind of transportation expenses you're talking about. Is it because you are the truck driver? It's not standard mileage they're giving you. It's actually some type of benefit. So what I would guess, Jorge, is that some portion of what they're reimbursing you is considered a fringe benefit, possibly not subject to income tax. And you probably could just ask your HR people if indeed that is the case. You're sweet to be checking. I think that's very smart of you, though, because I don't like surprises, and I don't want someone coming back to me telling me I did something wrong. So just double check with your HR people. I am thinking that part of what you're getting reimbursed may be one of those fringe benefits that has a special tax benefit for you. Okay, so that's good. Thank you for calling. I hope you were still listening and could hear the answer. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. Okay, and then Andrea is giving me some additional information on truck drivers. I'll take a second to look at that at the break, and then when we come back, I'll see if I can add something in addition to that. If you have tax questions, give us a call. We were just talking about multi-state returns and when you might have them. It might not just be for people who are working in different states. It might not just be for people who have rental property. You might be someone who gets a tax reporting document called a K-1. What is a K-1? It's a Schedule K-1 that comes to you. It's from a pass-through entity. It could be if you have an interest in an S corporation, a partnership, an estate, a trust, or maybe a limited partnership, a publicly traded partnership. Maybe your investment advisor has invested in a publicly traded partnership that issues you a K-1. What happens with K-1s is you may be given a schedule for state filing. And sometimes, especially with these publicly traded partnerships, it's usually a detailed schedule that's attached to the K-1. And you kind of have to look through the list of states and the breakdown of where they got their income, because a partnership may be a business that has operations all over the country. And they have to do tax filings in each of the states where they're doing business. And if they have a lot of income in any of those states, that then gets passed out to the shareholders or partners, you know, beneficiaries, whatever it might be, they may have to pass that income to you. And if it's of a significant amount, a material amount, you may be required to file a tax return in that state. Quite often, we find that the amount of ownership in some of these publicly traded partnerships is so low that by the time they give you your share of any particular state's income, it is so low or minimal that it may not have mattered, and you may be below the filing requirements for those other states. But you got to still pay attention to it in case it ends up being something you know, a little more significant. So watch for that. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. It's funny, I'm looking at my phone. I have to take my glasses off, even though I have trifocals, and then I'm trying to put my glasses back on. Oh, it's tough getting old. Folks, this is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about various tax topics. If you have a question you would like answered, you can give us a call at 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We talked a little bit about multi-state tax returns. I had just finished at the last break talking about Schedule K-1, which may affect some people who maybe you're a Pennsylvania resident and you get a K-1 that shows that there's income to be reported for, you know, some state. I'll give you another, for example, let's say you are a beneficiary of an estate and let's say mom died and she had a rental property in California. And there was some income on that rental property. Maybe she had it in a trust and they were reporting regular income. And even after she died, some of that income was still coming in until you kind of managed the affairs and finished up. Maybe you sold the property. What's going to happen if it's a final return or an ongoing return, to the extent that there's income from that property, you're going to have to file a state return, or the executor or trustee would have to file a return in that state, and then they would issue a K-1 as to what the income is on that. Now, some states follow the federal rules, so they would not have maybe a state K-1. They would only have a federal K-1. So you'd look at this federal K-1, and you might see rental income of, you know, $5,000. It gets a little tricky for Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania says if you're the beneficiary from a state other than Pennsylvania and you get a K-1, you're supposed to be able to calculate the income based on Pennsylvania rules to see what you need to report on your Pennsylvania return. That gets a little tricky because you may not control any of that or have the books on that or know the details of that. So that is something you probably want to take up with the attorney for the estate or trust. But just be aware that is another situation where you may have to file a return for a non-resident state. All right. You also, I just want to mention, you may need to consider the consequences of multi-state ownership as well, that if you do own property in another state, just for your own personal estate planning issues, you want to make sure you talk to an attorney about the consequences of that and what it means to you for Pennsylvania inheritance tax purposes, or if by having that property in another state, what kind of estate administration costs might be incurred if you own property in, let's say, New Jersey, Maryland, you know, South Carolina. Do you understand all the consequences of what could transpire if anything happens to you in that other state? Because there may be steps that you could take today to minimize that or to make the administration of that property go much smoother for your personal representative or your heirs. All right. Phone number 610-758-8810. Jeff and I are throwing our hands up. We can't believe it. 2 weeks ago, we had like 8 calls.
Insane.
Last week, we had, I think, a couple with lots and lots of questions. And tonight, maybe because it's a nice night. Because we're running out of time, folks. I mean, it's almost April 15th. And I'm telling you, it has gotten so crazy the tax reporting has gotten so crazy. I don't know how anybody can do it these days. There's got to be lots and lots of questions. I know something just came out in the news today that a bunch of tax returns that were filed with one of the big tax filers ended up getting bounced, and it affected a lot of people's refunds. Now, I know that in our office, we had to wait to electronically file a whole slew of returns. Anybody that had an education credit, we were told we could not electronically file those returns, I think until, gosh, I think it was like the second week of March, like maybe just like a week ago even. Maybe it was the first week of March. We had to wait to file those. And I don't know if that's where this other company had the hiccup, if they were filing them when the forms weren't ready at the IRS. I'm not sure why the software would have allowed them to file them. Our software wouldn't allow them to file. So it's been a tough tax season. We've had so many delays in being able to file tax returns because of the tax law changes that were implemented in January that then put the IRS back because, you know, they had to have all their software and systems set up for what they thought the tax rules were going to be. Then the tax rules changed the first week of January. Then they had to go and change all of their software again. And then all the companies who provide the software for tax preparation, they had to change all their forms. And it really creates like a backlog. And it's very stressful. An accountant's job is probably the second most stressful job to that of a dentist. It's just really tough. And then we have, you know, clients calling asking for their tax returns. The IRS really should have came out and said, you know, I guess it might take an act of Congress to say, you know, let's extend it from April 15th to May 15th this year automatically. It's funny because, you know, they give all of the brokers, custodians, you know, asset management companies, they give them all kinds of extensions to file their 1099s, and yet they're not extending our regular due date. Granted, we could all take advantage of the normal extension that the IRS has, but why not just extend the regular date from April 15th to May 15th if we're letting all these other companies issue their 1099s as late as the end of February? It used to be they had to be out by January 31st. We have clients calling us saying, hey, I haven't gotten my 1099 yet. Well, guess what? All these companies were allowed to have extensions. It used to be January 31st. Then we could start doing taxes early in February. Well, now we have clients who aren't even getting their 1099s till the end of February. And guess what? We're already starting to get corrected 1099s. And it's across the board. It's not just one company. It's not just one mutual fund. It is across the board. We also had a lot of problems this year with 1098s. There was one bank in particular that had a little glitch with their system where they switched the taxpayer ID number with the employer ID number of the bank. And that set off, you know, some trouble with 1098s, which is where we report mortgage interest. So why would this be critical if we know the right number? Why would it be critical? It's because when companies prepare these tax documents, they actually transmit an electronic file to the IRS saying, hey, IRS, here are all the Social Security numbers of the people who paid mortgage interest. Well, if they're transmitting to the IRS everybody's Social Security number, and it's actually the number of the bank as being the one who paid the mortgage interest, that is going to cause a problem on your tax return because the IRS runs these diagnostic tools where they match up payer ID numbers to payee ID numbers. So if in their system your Social Security number does not match up with either income that you've reported or with deductions you've taken, that's why we get these letters that are generated from that type of matching system. So when we're having late 1099s for dividend reporting, we're having wrong 1098s reported, we're having tax returns, and I think the number of tax returns that were rejected with, or at least the refunds were compromised, was something to the tune of like 600,000 returns. Maybe that's why people aren't calling in tonight. Maybe they're all frantic because they're affected by it. It causes a lot of problems. So we need to find a way to kind of just make this whole process easier. It's quite frustrating. So if you have questions this evening, give us a call, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. When will you have part year returns, and when would this apply? So a part year return. So maybe you don't have a multi-state return. You might have a part year return. Well, a part year return could end up being a multi-state return. So what happens? A change of residence, someone could die, change in entity. So maybe you're a partnership and you changed what you were doing, or you were an S corp and you decided not to be anymore, or whatever. A change in entity could cause a part year return. And part year return may even apply at the federal level, and that would typically be, as I said, if there's a change in an entity type. If someone dies, they would only have like a part year return. What's interesting though, for if federal, if someone dies, they actually get to use the annual amounts, the total amounts, for things like the standard deduction and the exemption. So if someone were to die even on January 2nd, and they would still be able to take the full exemption and the full standard deduction. What happens at the state level, though, is quite often it gets allocated based on the time of residency. So you need to have the dates of, you know, when did you become a resident? When did you end your residence? And then typically what happens if you've moved, you have a part year return for both states where you lived. So that is a part year return. You may not always have a part year return for the state you're in, because maybe you stay in Pennsylvania, but you move from one local jurisdiction to another. So now your federal is a nice clean return. Your state is a nice clean return. It's your local that gets all messed up. And I don't like those anyway. So the locals really can almost take as long as some of these federal returns. They're getting easier. They're getting better. And we'll talk about those in a minute. But what happens with the local level is, again, as I mentioned earlier, you might want to keep pay stubs in case your employer doesn't do the correct cutoff. So if you move from one locality to another, you will have a part year tax return for each local that you're filing. So if I live in Upper Meconjee and I move to Lower Saucon, I'm going to have a part year tax return, let's say 3 months Upper Meconjee, 9 months Lower Saucon, and my employer, I stayed at the same employer the whole time. If I didn't let my employer know the exact time I moved, then how they were paying the local income tax may be off. So again, by using your pay stub, it's very easy to identify the income that was earned during each period of residency. You put that income, the correct amount of income, on your return, and then you can allocate the withholdings based on that income, and then the local tax collector will go kind of even it up for everyone. So that's kind of a simple explanation of that. It may be a little bit more complicated than that, depending on your situation, but that's the gist of it. Folks, if you have questions this evening, please give us a call. We still have about 15 minutes left. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I wanted to keep the lines going tonight for tax questions. We haven't had too many, but I am here for that, and I'm just kind of filling in with this other stuff, so you're not bothering me by interrupting me, because the next thing I'm going to talk about is local taxes, and that's the one thing I hate talking about. So when we're right up to a break, but I have a call, Jeff. Should I take the call first and then we'll do the break? Okay, we have John on line one. John, hi, can you hear me?
Barely.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. How can I help you?
Really, I've got two questions.
Great.
One is, should I prepay my mother-in-law's funeral?
Mm-hmm. That's I would say almost always a good idea. You know, I don't know if you're doing any kind of elder planning or Medicare planning, Medicaid planning for her at all. But I think sometimes, first of all, I think it's a good idea because it reduces her assets. It's taken care of. It's not something you want to think about, you know, when you're in the situation. You'd rather be spending, you know, time with family and then trying to have to arrange all this stuff. Is she cognizant? Is she aware of things that she could help with the planning as well?
She's right on the edge.
Okay. Because sometimes, too, I think that's a service that people can do for their children or loved ones, whoever's left to, you know, take care of these arrangements. I think it's something that everyone should, you know, think about, you know, when they're in the state of mind to do it. I just think it's nice to kind of have it arranged so people aren't arguing and kids aren't fighting about, you know, who's going to do what and where are we going to go and what's it going to look like, you know, because I want someone to just throw me in the ocean. I don't want anybody taking too much time with me. But yeah, I think it could be a very good idea.
Actually, her wish is that she be cremated and thrown in the ocean.
Seriously?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. See? So she and I would get along really well. Yeah. But you know what? Cremations aren't even cheap anymore these days. They're even expensive. So, you know, good luck with that. Okay. What was your other question?
In my Roth IRA, mm-hmm. I went to a pipeline partnership.
Yep.
And they sent me a K-1.
Yep.
And I looked at that, and I have no idea what this thing is. Do I have to worry about that if it's in a Roth?
No, but and this is a great question because I'm seeing a lot of these this year, a lot of K-1s, a lot of people getting into the master limited partnerships. And if they are in a IRA or in a Roth IRA, you do not have to do anything with those K-1s. And about the only way you can really tell is to very carefully read who the... who it's addressed to. And usually it'll say, you know, Lori Siebert, you know, Roth IRA or Lori Siebert IRA or something like that. You got to make sure you're reading your address correctly and know where your investments are. But no, you don't have to report it. So just put a line through it and say Roth, not reportable.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Because after looking at this K-1, I can't decipher it.
Yeah, thank God. I know. They've got every little bitty line, and it's like, you know, they think we're all sophisticated taxpayers who do this little investment, and they give you, you know, 10 pages of K-1 information and how to report it. It gets crazy. So don't worry about it. That's good. Easy question.
Thank you, Laurie.
Thank you, John. Have a good night. Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll see if we have any more calls. 610-758-8810.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Okay, we are back. If you have questions, we still have some time. 610-758-8810. I'm going to jump. I was going to talk a little bit more about local taxes and kind of where it's going, but I want to get something across that I think is important. Just like at the beginning of the show, when I mentioned New York, folks who live in New York, or excuse me, work in New York and live in Pennsylvania, we have a people who live in the area who work in Philadelphia. So I just wanted to quickly mention something about Philadelphia as well. And that is, if you work in Philadelphia, your employer withholds Philadelphia tax, city tax, automatically. Whether you're a resident or a non-resident, you have to pay Philadelphia city tax. There's a resident rate and there's a non-resident rate. But if you have an employer who's in Philadelphia, but you actually work outside of Philadelphia, and I have seen this, you and your employer is withholding Philadelphia tax, you actually may not be subject to that. So there is a form called a wage tax refund petition. I'll give you an example. I know someone who worked with a Philadelphia employer. They hired him. They sent him to St. Louis for months to work on a job in St. Louis. He never worked in Philadelphia. Never, never. So we actually petitioned for the wage tax refund, and he got his Philadelphia tax that had been withheld refunded. Now, why would that make sense when you say, you know, well, I pay a local tax here anyway. So if I'm not paying my Philadelphia tax, my local, where I live locally, Upper Macungie maybe, I would have to pay the tax there. Yes, you would. But the difference is, you know, substantial when you look at the rates for Philadelphia city tax versus our local rate, which is, you know, could be anywhere 1%, 1.45%, depending on what local jurisdiction you're in. So for people who work for Philadelphia employers who may be withholding Philadelphia tax, if you actually are someone who is not really working in the city or get sent out on jobs where you're not in the city, you might want to consider whether this would apply to you. It's called a wage tax refund petition. You have to complete it very, very detailed, specific about your days, keep track of your days, and then both the employee and the employer have to sign it as well. But that could go quite well for people who are paying a high Philadelphia income tax. As far as other local taxes go, one of the things that was crazy in Pennsylvania, still is crazy. Someone had told me this and I didn't verify it or anything, but they had said that Pennsylvania has more local taxing jurisdictions than all the other states combined in the whole country. So because it had gotten so crazy, and it's really crazy for poor tax preparers, start to feel sorry for me. It's March 13th. One of the reasons, you know, it was just getting crazy because every local jurisdiction had different mailing addresses, and they have different mailing addresses, you know, if you have a refund or if you have fully withheld or if you have tax due, there's different P.O. boxes. It's just gotten completely crazy. So recently they tried to narrow it down and have some major tax collectors. So in our area in particular, we're looking at Berkheimer and Keystone Collections. So those are really the two big collection agencies that we have in Lehigh County and Northampton County. You have to still be a little careful because in Lehigh County, for example, most of the localities will file their local tax returns with Berkheimer. But, for example, the city of Bethlehem and Fountain Hill Borough, they still report to Keystone Collections. So it's not like totally across the board, but you just have to be aware. Northampton, so Lehigh County, mostly Berkheimer. Northampton, mostly Keystone, except for two areas, and that's North Catasauqua Borough and Walnutport Borough. Those are Berkheimer. All the rest for Northampton County, I believe, are Keystone. And what was really funny is they swapped some of the taxing, the tax collectors. Now, the beautiful thing is that you need to know about, because we used to have these questions sometimes, is if your employer withholds tax, let's say I work in Upper Macungie and my employer withheld Upper Macungie tax, but I live in, you know, Lynn Township. Well, the tax collectors are the ones who have to kind of go figure that out. I don't have to file a tax return in Upper Macungie if I live in Lynn Township or vice versa. The tax collecting agencies will go and work with the various local jurisdictions to make sure that they get the taxes the way they're supposed to. I don't know if any of you remember last year, all of us were filling out forms, residency forms for our employers. We were all supposed to be filling them out to let our employer know where we resided, because I think what happens is they are withholding where we work, but they have to know where we reside. I can't keep up with it, but the goal is to try to just make sure that we get cleaner tax collections. But be aware that you may be subject to local tax. And here's something in particular that you have to keep in mind. If you work, or let me explain this. Let me start over. Some of the jurisdictions don't have the same rates. So if I live in a jurisdiction that taxed 1% and I work in a jurisdiction that taxes 1.35%, My employer is going to withhold the 1.35 because that's where we're located, in the 1.35 jurisdiction. On my local tax return, I can only take a credit for the amount that I would pay in my local, in my locale. So Upper Macungie, 1%. If I make $50,000 and my local tax is $500 and my employer withheld, I don't know what that would be, $700, I can only take the credit for $500. That extra amount that was withheld is going to go to the city of Allentown. So you have to be aware of that. You can't, you really shouldn't be seeing refunds on your local returns unless you have something like employee business expenses. And employee business expenses that you take on your local return are going to be the same that you could have taken on your Pennsylvania return. The Pennsylvania form for unreimbursed employee business expenses is the PAUE. Unreimbursed employee business expenses. That's where you get a deduction for things like union dues or work uniforms, work boots. If you have certain other unreimbursed employee business expenses, you report those on the UE. Licenses like nursing licenses. Let me just mention though, sometimes people will come to us and they say that they're in, they have professional dues. Pennsylvania does not give us a deduction for professional dues. The federal does, but Pennsylvania doesn't. Or membership dues, professional dues, certain publications, professional publications. Pennsylvania isn't going to give us a deduction for those. So federal doesn't match state. But once you do know what the state rules are, you report those on the Pennsylvania UE, and you can use that same form for your local return, and you get a deduction for things like I had just mentioned. You must attach to your local return a copy of that UE, the Pennsylvania UE, and, of course, a copy of your W-2 if you're paper filing your return. Keep in mind, some of these tax collectors now have online filing. So if in the past you would give your tax preparer all the information to file your federal, state, and local return, you may choose to go online and file your own local return. The only thing you have to be aware of is if you are someone who gets these deductions that where you file a PAUE, you might as well just let your tax preparer do it because they're going to attach that UA to your local return, get the deduction, and they kind of can just do it all at once. Okay. Next week, folks, I am going to have two guests with me, and they are publishers of Lehigh Valley Woman Magazine. It is a free bi-monthly publication dedicated to education. I happen to write an article for it each issue. You can find it around the Lehigh Valley. I know that the Edge Restaurant has some in their restaurant. The Hotel Bethlehem. I've seen it at OAA. So when you're sitting around the Lehigh Valley and you're looking at magazines piled on tables in waiting rooms and dentist's office, you may find Lehigh Valley Woman Magazine. Again, it is a free bi-monthly publication. If there's a stack there, you're welcome to take it. But I do write for that. But the reason I wanted to have the publishers on the show is to talk about their mission of bringing good education to our Lehigh Valley, and in particular, while it's not just for women, it does highlight quite a few of the women and women professionals and women business owners and in our area. So I think it's really important to highlight them and make sure that we are patronizing them as well. So I look forward to having them next week and talking about their mission and what it means to be part of a publication like that and all that they do, because they're in areas more than just the Lehigh Valley. So that will be next week, Celeste Klein and Linda Hunsicker, publishers of Lehigh Valley Woman Magazine. Well, we didn't have too many calls tonight, but I do want to thank the callers who did call in. The hour still went quite fast for those of us here in the studio, and I want to tell Jeff thank you and Andrea thank you and Rob thank you for being there for me. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want you to remember, Pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.